The final case for oral argument this morning is Janelle Kane versus Fortis Insurance Company. The appellant, Janelle Kane, is represented by N.D. Nacer Jr., an attorney from Sioux Falls, and the appellee, Fortis Insurance Company, is represented by Christine Kreider O'Connell, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Court would like to welcome students from the Dakota Wesleyan University political science class. Mr. Nacer, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. If it pleases the court and counsel and distinguished guests.
Excuse me, restart the clock, too. I failed to note that Justice Sabers has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Lee Anderson, a circuit judge from Mitchell, to sit in Justice Sabers' place. And once again, you may proceed.
Your Honors, in this case, Janelle Kane seeks to overturn a circuit court decision which allowed her state-mandated health insurance carrier to deny prescribed medically necessary treatment for three particular conditions. One of them was severe degenerative musculoskeletal joint instability accompanied by crippling and disabling pain. The second was high blood pressure. And the third was a gynecological problem in the nature of a complete absence of ability to menstruate. All three conditions had diagnostic codes different than obesity. The treatment prescribed by her doctors was undisputedly medically necessary, and no challenge has been made to that finding. The treatment was gastroplasty, or stomach stapling, which had as its objective through the elimination of body weight so as to take stress off of various parts of her body which have been keeping them from functioning. Her anatomy was impeded. It was to reduce or eliminate all three of these serious and even life-threatening conditions. And despite the denial, since they were medically necessary conditions, Kane had no choice but to go ahead and get the stomach stapling surgery, pay for it herself, and she now seeks to have her insurance policy reimburse her approximately $20,000 that she paid out of pocket for the cost of the operation. After the gastroplasty procedure, the blood pressure and gynecological problems completely resolved as anticipated by her doctors, and her joint degeneration stabilized and quit progressing and quit degenerating markedly. Fortis and the circuit court held that despite the medical necessity of the coverage, that coverage is provided under the policy for these three conditions, but it would not be provided for under an exclusion which reads weight control. You are not covered for any treatment or regimen, medical or surgical, for the purpose of controlling your weight or the treatment of obesity. Janelle Kane responds that the purpose of the treatment in this case was not to control weight, not to treat obesity. The exclusion made the purpose relevant to all that was to be affected by the exclusion. And it is undisputed on this record, and there is virtually no evidence to the contrary, that the purpose was to treat three covered serious illnesses by the only remaining means of doing so, gastroplasty. She had tried all other conditions, all other treatments and modalities to treat her condition, and had failed. And she had been obese from birth. It is a genetic condition, according to the record. A genetic predisposition to it. She was morbidly obese, not just obese, morbidly obese. And the term morbid obesity is sometimes defined as more than 100 pounds over healthy body weight, or sometimes two or three times normal body weight, but always accompanied by morbid conditions. In this case, the morbid conditions were blood pressure, and were skeletal problems and the menstruation gynecological problems that she had. She was not functioning correctly.
Did Does the fact that she was diagnosed as morbid obese make a difference in applying the language of the insurance policy when the insurance policy exempts out obesity as opposed to morbid obesity?
Yes, and our position is that you look at the policy from the way that a reasonable insured would look at the policy. A reasonable insured would look at this policy and say obesity can be treated for cosmetic purposes, it can be treated for non-life-threatening purposes, it can be treated for just the sake of appearance or preference. It does not have to be accompanied by disease, whereas morbid obesity is. It's two different conditions.
Are you advocating then we recognize the doctrine of reasonable expectations for the insured then? Because it's been around for a long time, but we've never really adopted it.
This court has never really recognized it, and I didn't brief that issue for you. It's not one that I've raised. I would like to see you adopt it because I think it's reasonable. I think it's always a reasonable way. When we buy insurance, Your Honors, we're buying it with an expectation, and that's part of the bargain. We don't get to say what goes in the policy. That's all boilerplate, and it's imposed on us. But we at least ought to have the right to express our expectation of what that coverage is supposed to be.
However,
the name
is,
of the game is not can you fool me in the policy.
However, it is a contract, and the insurance company makes the decision on what they will charge for the risk they're assuming. And how does that fit into your argument then?
Well,
not
I think
so much for the reasonable, since you haven't raised it, but even for this portion here about excluding the obesity.
I think that the language that was used in this case shows what the company intended to cover. And in addition to the language used in the policy, we have to look in this case at the law, because this is a state-mandated coverage. The statutes tell you some of the requirements of what has to be involved in this policy and what can't be involved in this policy. For example, genetic distinctions, genetic discrimination is not permissible. It's expressly precluded by statute. And we have argued in this case that that is a discrimination that has been done improperly in the circuit court's decision. And so we do have to look at more than just the policy in this case, because it is state mandated.
I don't understand that. I never did understand that argument on how there could be some genetic discrimination. Isn't everyone treated the same under this, the conditions of the policy? If you want a treatment for obesity or weight loss, it's excluded. It doesn't make any difference who you are, does it?
If you characterize the groups in that way, that would be correct. However, I believe that's an improper characterization. No offense, Your Honor. I believe the proper characterization of this issue is, are you going to permit discrimination in state-mandated coverage between necessities caused or aggravated by a genetic condition, in this case morbid obesity, when these very same conditions are required to be treated in all other people? This policy undisputedly would cover blood pressure treatment, whatever is necessary for other people. This policy would cover skeletal problems, joint replacements, anything like that would be covered.
Mr. Nasser, that gets us to the next question, which, as I see it, this is a medical legal dispute.
Yes, sir.
And from the legal, from the medical side of the question, isn't it undisputed that the primary diagnosis is morbid obesity, and what the medical people would say is that the joint issue and the hypertension are all secondary diagnoses. Isn't that?
No, sir, and that is not what the evidence indicates in the case. The evidence is undisputed that Janelle, as I stated, was obese since birth, and in fact morbidly obese since her teenage years. She did not seek any kind of treatment for this obesity of this nature at all until she got high blood pressure and her doctors couldn't treat her joints anymore, and she had stopped menstruating for a number of years. This treatment was for the purpose of alleviating dangerous and serious conditions by the only medically necessary treatment that was available.
Now, you've said that she went ahead and had the surgery and it worked on all three conditions. Is that relevant, whether it worked or not?
It just simply buttresses our contention that it is medically necessary treatment.
All right.
That's all. I don't think it has any more significance than that.
All right.
Well, that was never in dispute in the case,
no, sir.
Was it?
No, sir.
Medical necessity is really not the question here.
No, the policy covers this unless this exclusion applies. Unless you find this exclusion excludes the coverage for these medically necessary
would
treatments.
Would there ever be an instance where gastroplasty would be properly excluded under the policy?
If there were no morbidity to the obesity, if there were no other health conditions, no other diagnostic codes involved, no other conditions. Obesity itself is not a justification for getting a gastroplasty under this policy. Mere obesity. And I don't know if that means 20 pounds, 50 pounds. We don't have mere obesity here. We don't have that. It's not the condition she's been diagnosed with. It's not the condition that she has. She has morbid obesity, and within that morbid obesity is also a number of other very serious and life-threatening conditions. And the purpose of the treatment was not to control weight or treat obesity. And that's all. And as a matter of fact, the exact phraseology of this particular exclusion was that weight control for the purpose of controlling weight, any treatment, for the purpose of controlling weight or treatment of obesity.
Isn't obesity always a health issue, though? I mean,
certainly.
I mean, we always hear doctors saying you keep your weight down. It's always going to be an issue. Health is always going to be a reason for having a gastroplasty.
Certainly. No, sir. I don't agree with that. I think that weight itself is not a reason to have a gastroplasty. That if that's all that's involved, then it's not covered under this policy. Our state mandated statutes do provide that there can be some weight control restrictions or exclusions in policies. However, they've never gone so far as to say that that means that you have to suffer death or crippling disease without treatment.
In other words, a doctor is not going to prescribe gastroplasty except in the most extreme situations.
Of course, that's true. And I believe that in itself screens out any practicality concerns that we may have about how this would perhaps run rampant or something like that. They should have the right to say you don't get to have diet pills at our or health clubs, or you don't get to take other kinds of medications or have other kinds of treatments to control your weight, or go to feel better class or something of that nature. We're not talking about that, and yet that's the way the reasonable person would normally look at a weight control type of program. Now, we wouldn't, of course, the policy only talks about medical and surgical things that would be excluded. The exclusion only is limited to that. And so we are talking about gastroplasty. In some instances, it might not be covered, because if it is merely somebody's whim to look better, it shouldn't be covered out of medical necessity. It's been excluded. However, this is not that case. This case was a very serious, morbid obesity that was life-threatening. And I don't think anybody that buys health insurance thinks that you can't get the treatment you need to take care of your high blood pressure and your severe joint problems. And so maybe I should have argued the reasonable expectations doctrine. I'm talking myself into it here. Under the undisputed evidence in the case, we have raised an insufficiency of evidence question that I don't want to waive by failing to mention it. And that is the purpose of this gastroplasty was undisputedly not for the purpose of her treating obesity, and there is no evidence that that is the purpose of the treatment, as opposed to the purpose of the treatment being to treat the medically significant conditions that she had. Janelle Kane also urges here that even if the treatment is construed as partly under the excluded purpose of weight control, if you find against me on that issue, it still should be covered because it is also undisputed that the predominating cause or the efficient cause of needing the treatment was not the weight, it was the immediate need for treatment of the three medical conditions that I've mentioned. And so when we invoke the doctrine that we've addressed in this case, in this state under the Lummel case, but not one which has been applied to health insurance yet in this state, as it has been in some others, and that is that when you've got a need for treatment that arises out of an excluded condition and a covered condition, the inquiry does not end with the exclusion. You have to look at the covered condition and weigh what the predominant cause, the predominant procuring cause, the efficient cause, the concurring cause is. And so the fact that something may be incidentally covered by an exclusion does not decide this case all by itself.
Doesn't now, that take us right back to what I asked earlier? What is the predominant cause here? Is it morbid obesity, or is it arthritis or hypertension, or
yes, sir, or something the else? Latter. Clearly the latter.
And the medical evidence supports that?
Yes, absolutely.
Which who testified to that?
We took the deposition of Dr. Peter O'Brien, the surgeon who did the gastroplasty, and the chiropractor who had been trying to keep her joint problems at bay, Dr. Van Riper, and they both verified that that's what this was about. And the medical necessity of it wasn't argued with by Dr. Beckman, the defendant's own doctor.
But Judge Sirska, in at least this letter opinion that I'm looking at, he concludes that was not the case, that the health benefits were secondary and that the main purpose was weight reduction.
If you read Judge Sirska's opinion, I believe it can fairly be read and needs to fairly be read as saying that the serious health conditions were a product of morbid obesity. They clearly were part of this complex, not just obesity, but the morbidity of the obesity. And in time, if we're looking at a linear way of looking at this, then clearly we have obesity which leads to three conditions. But if we're looking at this substantively, we're not getting treatment for obesity. We're getting treatment to save her life. And that's what the case is about. And so I'm not arguing in the linear sense, but what I'm saying is very clearly the purpose of this treatment, the reason it was prescribed by her doctors was the desperate situation that she had. That's what's important about the case. The Lummel case is a casualty case, but it still acknowledges the efficient or predominating efficient cause. And so at least in South Dakota, we have recognized in our case law that there can be more than one cause, some of which are excluded, some of which are covered, and there must be a balancing test. There must be an analysis to see what the reason is. The way I would phrase this is, it looks to me like this is like this policy did not address morbid obesity. It did not address anything but obesity in the ordinary understanding of the word. It was never intended to preclude us from having serious health problems dealt with. And clearly, like the three Medicaid cases that we cited, I believe it's on page 16 of our brief, those cases which hold that when you have a governmentally mandated situation, you've got a public policy that they look at, and that public policy is to cover serious health conditions. And so these things should be narrowly construed, and discrimination laws do apply to this situation because it is state action. And so we would urge this court to overturn this decision, recognize that high blood pressure, skeletal problems, and gynecological problems require a further analysis than if treatment is for mere obesity.
Thank you, Mr. Nacer. Ms. O'Connell, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris O'Connell, and I represent Fortis Insurance Company in this case. This is a contract question, pure and simple. We both briefed it on motions for summary judgment, cross motions. Judge Sirska was interested in the question about whether her obesity was of such a nature that it required further inquiry. So we did proceed to a trial with this. We had testimony from her medical providers, from Ms. Kane, and from the doctor from Fortis Insurance, Dr. Beckman. But this boils down to interpretation of a contract in the setting of health insurance. Now, the contract itself, at Exhibit 4A in the record, is a South Dakota standard policy. What a South Dakota standard policy is a guarantee issue product that has, before 2003, was mandated by the state of South Dakota to be provided to individuals who are considered high risk insurance risks. It's guarantee issue. If you've had creditable coverage, you can go into this plan and get insurance coverage. It's guarantee issue. They cannot turn you down. This is a program that the state found that was necessary to prevent people from being uninsured. Now in 2003, just for the court's information, that was the statute 58 was changed to be the risk pool. So when you hear about South Dakota having the risk pool, that's what has replaced the basic and standard. And the basic and standard plan, people still have that and they still are functioning. All the insurance companies have agreed under the statute or are required by the insurance division to accept a certain threshold of these guarantee issues. It starts at 2%. And as soon as all the insurance companies that work in this state that provide individual health coverage meet that threshold, then it goes up another threshold. So people who come to get this policy are given this policy. And that's what Ms. Kane obtained in 1998. Now, this policy, basic and standard, is controlled by the rules that are promulgated by the insurance of division, or division of insurance, excuse me. And if you look at the administrative rules of South Dakota at 20:06-39, 24, and 25, it specifically sets forth the standards that should be included in a standard plan. That's the basic things that have to be covered, and it's required. The lifetime maximums, what will be covered, what services will be covered, what's eligible, what expenses are to be paid. All of that is set out according to the rules. What's mostly important to this case is that the administrative rules promulgated by the Division of Insurance also have allowable exceptions and limitations. And one of those is number 9, weight modification. They can, a plan, any of the insurance companies that carry the standard plan, have exclusions for weight modifications, including services, supplies, or treatment related to organized programs, treatment of obesity by diet drugs, any form of surgery or complications of surgery, and any exercise program or equipment. So it is allowable for these insurance companies to have this particular exclusion in their standard policies. And Fortis does. And Fortis did when she underwent her gastric bypass.
What about the, normally when we look at language and we look at a contract, we try to interpret the language as it's expressed, obviously. And the difference between morbidity or morbid obesity and just obesity, which is what your company's exclusion was, just refers to obesity, and the appellant has made quite an argument that that's different than morbid obesity.
Well, I think the record, if you look at Dr. O'Brien's testimony and also Dr. Beckman's testimony, there was that question proposed to him. What is the difference between obesity versus morbid obesity? And his answer to that was, it depends on the amount of weight that you are in excess of your desired weight for your height. And obesity and then morbid obesity is categorized by what we call body mass index. And that is a formula that the doctors can do and insurance companies also can do to determine your level of obesity, so be it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean just because you have morbid obesity doesn't mean that you necessarily are sick or have other some of these other problems. Although anyone who is morbidly or even obese is going to start having problems. Pressure on the cardiovascular system to try to pump the blood throughout this large body causes a lot of stress on the heart. Therefore, you get the hypertension or high blood pressure. Also, carrying a lot of excess weight is going to cause problems on your joints. You're going to have problems, femoral problems, as he referred to in Ms. Kane's case. These are not unusual secondary complications that people have from obesity. So what they look at then is for obesity and morbid obesity is the amount of the body mass index. Where these other things come into play is called comorbidities. These are symptoms or other conditions that go along with your obese condition. Whether that be obese or morbid obesity, you have comorbidities. That includes your hypertension and all these other secondary problems that arise because of the excess weight.
Then the when you go to that point, then it almost becomes non-elective type of a surgery, where before it may be for cosmetic purposes. But if you add all of these other symptoms that are or other diagnoses that are actually a present, does that take it out of this exclusion?
No. If you look at the contract at the beginning says we will pay for these services. These services have to be medically necessary. Surgery is one of those things that's listed in the list of things that are covered. They will pay for surgery. It has to be medically necessary. Now, these are all the services, but these are all subject to limitations as well. So you have a separate section in your policy called limitations or exclusions. Exclusions are things that are not covered under any circumstances, whether they're medically necessary or not. And there is a list of those in Ms. Kane's policy. They're all, as the policy said, they've got topic headings so people can find out where to look. And the one here is weight control. And it says you are not covered for any treatment or regime, medical or surgical, for the purpose of controlling your weight or for the treatment of obesity. One treatment for obesity is gastric bypass, along with a host of other things that can be done, medications, diets, fitness, all those things. But just because something may be more medically necessary than not, or more medically necessary, does not mean that it can override an exclusion. That's what the individual contracted with the insurance company for. She went into her doctor, and Dr. O'Brien's testimony shows you that when she went in there, she told him, I do not believe that this is covered by my insurance. She had been denied from the very beginning on pre-authorization. This wasn't a procedure that she had undergone and then turned to have coverage to find out that it was excluded. This was excluded from the beginning under the pre-authorization by the company. And she again went to her doctor and said, I still want to have this. I feel it's important enough to me to be able to drop the weight. I've tried everything I can. And I give her a lot of credit for doing that. But that doesn't mean the insurance company has to pay for it.
Do you attach any relevance to the claim by Mr. Nacer that the procedure succeeded in treating all three of her conditions?
I believe that her testimony was that the procedure had ameliorated those comorbidities for her, which proved that it was probably a result of the excess weight that she carried. I think the evidence is clear that it did that. But just because you have a good desired outcome doesn't mean that's going to take it out of the exclusion. I mean, you look here, it's got TMJ joints. You're not going to be covered for that. But because you go through the procedure and maybe have a remodification of your TMJ joint and that it's successful, that it should be covered, that's not what the exclusions are for.
What's your view of Dr. O'Brien's testimony on the predominant cause that was being treated here? You heard my questions before about primary and secondary diagnoses, and Mr. Nasir's talked about the predominant cause doctrine. I don't know if you can meld those two together, but what's your view of what Dr. O'Brien said about those issues?
Dr. O'Brien's testimony was that the primary purpose for gastric bypass is to reduce weight. And in response to that, people will have improvements of their medical conditions. And that, I believe, is what he said about that. She said that she was a candidate for gastric bypass because of some of these other things, and also because of her BMI, which is her body mass index. As to the primary intent or the proximate efficient cause, he's got about five different things that he's called it through his argument and through his brief: essential, predominant purpose, primary effect, predominant cause. This doctrine, he cited the Lummel case from South Dakota. It's a 1926 case. That's a property casualty case. These doctrines have not been applied to health insurance, and I don't believe that they do apply, because I think once they are applied, or if the court says contracts can be interpreted this way, it's going to turn all insurance on its head, because there is no possible way that anyone could price a product, nor could anyone afford an insurance product, if it were allowed to use that approximate efficient cause to override an exclusion.
Well, the casualty market seems to have handled it.
Well, property and casualty is a little bit different. The Lummel case, for example, was about a car that goes flying over an embankment. And the insurance is trying to decide, well, how much resulted from flying over the embankment and how much was caused by the fire that happened to the car when it ended up going down the hill. And so they were trying to figure out who would pay what and what was the proximate cause or the proximate efficient cause of the damage to that particular vehicle. And if you look at some of the other cases that Mr. Nasir cited in his brief, I'll find those. These all talk about property casualty, the Palum case, and the ones from the California court that he cited about why a slope fell down in the back of someone's house. Those are all property casualty cases, and it does apply. There's one particular thing that's not covered in the insurance policy, and there's another that is. The cases that he cited for the proposition to adopt this policy were from different jurisdictions, and it came down to inconsistencies between two doctors and an interpretation of a policy. Specifically, I'm looking at the Rozek case that he cited. Two doctors weren't sure if the tumor was the cause of the hypertension, and so you had a dichotomy there. But the causes issue did not apply to this insurance policy. Indiana insurance law did, and they were looking at the proximate cause and a pre-existing condition. So that wasn't adopting the efficient proximate cause. Again, there was another case that he cited, the Bobbitt case. It denied coverage, and that was an obesity case. But the person had to prove that obesity under that contract was either an illness or an injury to bring it into coverage, and it could not. So the court, again, didn't apply this particular doctrine that he's advancing, but did it on a different basis. And we have to look at South Dakota law. They haven't adopted this. And like I said before, to do that certainly would render every exclusion in every policy meaningless. It really would. Because someone could say, well, it's medically necessary for me to have this because I have this condition, which is treated. And yes, her hypertension was treated under the policy. She'd been on medication, on Zestril, for many years. You heard her testimony that her blood pressure was under control with the Zestrol. In fact, there were times she even went off of her Zestrol. She was treated for her joint discomfort with the chiropractor. And you heard about that and how obesity contributes to that. But you also read in the record that she was in a motor vehicle accident and injured her neck and some other parts of her spine. And that could not necessarily be differentiated, although Dr. Van Riper did give her a 5% impairment on the car accident and said that she did have 5% impairment from some pre-existing conditions. So some of these conditions, and that was treated. I mean, the policy covers the chiropractic treatment for her as well. She also saw Dr. Stoltz for some of her female problems. But yes, she did have morbid obesity, and she had these secondary problems related to it. But the question still comes down to, are they covered in her insurance policy? And the answer to that is no, they are excluded very clearly. Another point that I just like to make is that any policy of insurance that is given or for sale or offer in the state of South Dakota has to be approved by the Division of Insurance. So the Division of Insurance has approved this standard policy that's issued by Fortis before they could even offer it to anyone. So the Division, looking at their rules that they promulgated and the contract, very clearly said that this policy is adequate for what she had contracted for. I would, for a moment, like to talk about the discrimination issue that Mr. Nacer raised. I believe I did make a note about the genetic. That statute on the genetic information has to do with, for example, if I had a test done to know if I carried the gene for breast cancer and I had that knowledge, would I have to tell that to my insurance company? And if I did, would they look at me different? That's what that statute was enacted for, was to preclude insurance companies from using that type of genetic information to deny or exclude or underwrite or rider different conditions. That had nothing to do with obesity. It talked about genetic information that may be known to an individual. Attorney Nacer, in his brief, talked about the ADA, he talked about Title 19, and the cases in his brief I thought were interesting in that one of them was brought by a prisoner against the prison, and whether, because of his obese condition, he should have special accommodations such as a bigger cell, different recreational activities and things like that. That has no bearing on this particular case. It doesn't stand for the proposition that he quoted, that it says morbid obesity is covered under the ADA or Title 19. The other case that he cited to stand for that proposition, I believe that might have been in his reply brief. Well, in any event, there isn't discrimination here. If you look at the discrimination statutes in South Dakota under the Unfair Trade Practices Act, everyone who gets a standard policy in South Dakota gets the same thing. The rules require it, the contract requires it. No one is treated any differently. Everyone who carries the standard policy will get the same coverage.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. There were a couple other things that Mr. Nacer raised in his brief. He really hasn't addressed it, but maybe just briefly for the court. He talked about the difference of the exclusions in the policy between weight control, and there was another one called weight reduction programs, and the fact that there were certain words that came after the weight reduction programs. He said whether at the end of that, at the end of the exclusion, it said whether or not weight reduction is medically appropriate. And I know Mr. Nacer got into that with Dr. Beckman during the trial. You know, any one of these exclusions could have those words written behind it. They're excluded whether or not they're medically appropriate or medically necessary. So I think that that is kind of a red herring argument, because it really makes no difference. Because it doesn't matter if it's medically necessary. If it's excluded, it's taken out of coverage. And this gastric bypass was taken out of coverage for that. He also did make a mention about the interpretation of a policy and if a policy plan is granted discretion or not in interpreting its contracts. This contract does allow for the plan to have discretion in interpreting the policy. However, when you read this exclusion, it is very clear what that exclusion meant to keep from coverage, and it was surgical treatment for obesity. It was very clear. The trial court looked at it, looked at all the evidence, in fact, took it to a trial to learn more about the medical parts of this, and I thought that was important, and I think that was prudent, but at the end of the day, the court did not find this language strained, unusual, and looking at it in its plain, ordinary way, the exclusion did apply.
Your time has expired.
Thank you,
counsel. Mr. Nacer, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. We tried to show to the circuit court by an offer of proof that under Fortis's own interpretations of its own policies and in common usage throughout the industry, treatments which might be precluded for one purpose are in fact allowable for another. For example, we cited to minoxidil, the high blood pressure drug. It would be covered for high blood pressure usage, but it's excluded for hair replacement purposes because it's Rogaine. Amitriptyline for headache pain by a neurologist, prescribed by a neurologist, is always covered. And yet, when it is used for mood elevation or in conjunction with psychiatric purposes, which it also has as its purpose, then it's not covered often. Sometimes is, sometimes isn't. Rhinoplasty, taking tissue out of somebody's nose, like a big nose like this, and reducing the size of it, would not be covered under many policies unless I couldn't breathe. And then it would be covered. And so we tried to get the circuit court to look deeper at the purposes for which this gastroplasty was being prescribed by her doctors. And he refused to do that. So we have made our record, and we would urge you to accept the offer of proof.
One more time, though, didn't Dr. O'Brien specifically say that the purpose, that's what you've just been talking about, that the purpose of this procedure is weight loss?
Yes. The purpose of the procedure is weight loss, but the reason for the procedure, for the weight loss, is the treatment of life-threatening conditions. It's not the sole purpose. That's the mechanism, and that's what he meant. The mechanism of effecting treatment for blood pressure in this case, for joint problems, was to take the gravitational forces off of her body that were making her ill. And so it's not just weight loss, and he never said that. He just said, he explained that this was an absolutely medically necessary procedure for her, or she would be seriously, seriously ill, and so, or remain that way and get worse. The test for coverage in this case is more complex than just will the medically necessary treatment also encompass something excluded, possibly excluded in this case. It's more than that, because we have to balance the coverages. Now, Ms. O'Connell said that we raised an issue, which we did, on the actual understanding of the policy, the way the policy is to be understood. There are two places in this policy where weight is addressed, not just one. And on one of them it says that medically necessary means that a procedure, service, or supply is all of the following: appropriate and necessary. Now, we know then that appropriate medical appropriateness is wholly within the concept of medical necessity as defined in their own policy. We look at the second weight loss exclusion, which we've cited to as Exhibit 13, and that weight loss exclusion says at the end of it whether or not medically appropriate, not whether or not medically necessary. We believe that this creates at a minimum the ambiguity necessary to justify my client's conclusion that this should be covered. This policy does not clearly exclude all medically necessary treatment if covered by an exclusion. So this would have covered the medical plans for weight reduction if they were whether or not medically appropriate. But when they're medically necessary, I mean, it would have excluded those. But when they're medically necessary, it did not exclude them. And the policy didn't say that.
Now, did the evidence then, if that was your stand at the trial court level, did you then go into the other how medically necessary is defined in the policy?
Yes.
Meaning, are there other recognized programs or less costly alternative services?
Was not an issue in this case because everything else had been tried.
Okay, and that was in the record.
Right, that's true. That is in the record.
She tried other weight reduction programs?
Oh yes, throughout her life. The evidence is solid on that point in the record. So we've got in this case, if you feel that this gastroplasty was only to reduce weight, no more, if that's all that's involved, then nothing beyond the exclusion is encompassed and you have to rule against her. If you feel that more is involved than that, then please don't limit the inquiry to just the exclusion, and as so much more is involved than that. And the exclusion does not trump medical necessity in this case, and especially where we have an ambiguity created within the very definitions in the exclusion of obesity, or the lack of definition more accurately, where obesity as commonly understood would not encompass treatment for blood pressure, for joint degeneration, and all of the things that you and I would receive treatment for under this policy, but she didn't get to. Thank you.
Mr. Nasser, I have one question.
Yes, sir.
How if an insurance company wanted to write a exclusion that was absolute, that could not be circumvented because there are other causes that or medical conditions that are being treated, how would they write such a exclusion?
Well, Fortis has written tighter exclusions than this in its other policies. And we did file at the last minute when the judge was trying to get us to finish this case about 6:30 at night, we marked Exhibit 17, I believe it is, and that has many of their other exclusions contained within it. Again, submitted an offer of proof. And some of these do say whether medically necessary or not. So it's possible to address the issue.
That's the language you would argue would be needed.
That's part of it. I'm not saying it would be permissible under a state mandated coverage. That's a different ballgame entirely. But I believe that if you're going to tighten this up the way that it would make it clear, you'd say whether or not medically necessary. Some of the exclusions said specifically gastroplasty, so as to distinguish them from liposuction for weight reduction and some other things. And so there are many better ways to do it than was done here. Whether this is sufficient is up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Nasser. This would conclude our November term of court. We're very pleased to be able to be one of the inaugural events at this new wonderful facility at Dakota Wesleyan. We'd specifically like to thank President Duffett, his administrative assistant, Lori Essig, for all their help and cooperation, the faculty here at Dakota Wesleyan, and the staff. We would like to express our gratitude to the South Dakota Highway Patrol who provided security and to the student monitors. We hope you've all found this an interesting and
educational experience. If you have curiosity as to how these cases are decided, our published opinions generally come out in 2 to 6 months from an oral argument, and they are available on our website, which is cited in our program here within 24 hours of the decision being issued, and you can read how the cases turn out. With that, thank you all for attending, and we are in recess.